Greetings. It's Tuesday, November 19th, and this is the Arizona Daily Star brought to you through Sun Sounds of Arizona and read by David Grant. Top of the news, Hobbs says she'll work with Trump on border security. This is from Emily Bragel of the Arizona Daily Star. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs highlighted her administration's work to embed National Guard soldiers at the border to help crack down on drug trafficking, while promising to work with the incoming Trump administration on border security during a visit to the border in Nogales on Monday. But in response to reporters' questions, she also indicated that she would push back against President-elect Donald Trump's threatened mass deportations, which she said would drain resources from initiatives that address real challenges at the border. I will not tolerate misguided policies that don't actually help with the critical work that's happening here, that you see here today, that actually helps, that actually keeps our community safe and secure, Hobbs said. I will not tolerate terrorizing communities or threatening Arizonans. The Democratic governor declined to comment on specific actions the governor's office would take in response to any heightened deportation efforts. We will absolutely respond appropriately when we know what these threats look like and how we can effectively respond, Hobbs said. I will work with the Trump administration when it benefits Arizonans. And if I need to stand up to them because their actions will harm Arizonans, I will do that. During the news conference held at the Mariposa Port of Entry, Hobbs said more than 40 National Guard troops are now embedded at the border with U.S. Customs and Border Protection personnel under her administration's Task Force SAFE, which launched in July. They're part of 170 National Guard soldiers embedded with law enforcement agencies across the state as part of the National Guard's existing counter-drug program, she said. When I launched Task Force SAFE, it wasn't about making headlines, she said. I saw an opportunity for the state to step in and mobilize our resources to make a tangible difference in partnership with federal agencies. Since the summer, the task force has been involved in the seizure of more than 6 million fentanyl pills and more than 1,400 pounds of meth, cocaine, fentanyl powder, and heroin, she said. Guardsmen are stationed within secondary search crews, rail inspection teams, and vehicle breakdown teams at Arizona's ports of entry. Every fentanyl pill that's taken off the street, every ounce of heroin seized, every gram of cocaine stopped is a serious blow to the cartels and drug traffickers doing Arizonans harm. They represent saved lives, families protected, and communities strengthened, Hobbs said. CBP Acting Commissioner Troy Miller said the task force is a force multiplier. It's an operational advantage, Miller said at a news conference. It's helping us identify and seize that fentanyl that transnational criminal organizations are trying to flood our streets with. It's also ensuring that our CBP personnel can focus on their critical law enforcement missions while maintaining the lawful trade and travel that keeps our nation's economy so strong and it's moving. Hobbs said the task force is part of her administration's effort to crack down on drug trafficking, including signing legislation to target high-volume fentanyl traffickers, providing $84 million to law enforcement agencies along the border, and supporting treatment programs for veterans. Hobbs' new news conference comes after an election in which Republicans strengthened their majority in the state legislature and which Arizonans voted to pass Proposition 314, a Republican-drafted measure based on legislation vetoed by Hobbs, which will allow state and local police to arrest people who enter Arizona from Mexico outside the port of entry if a similar Texas law being challenged by the U.S. government is upheld. Opponents said it will result in racial profiling, erode community trust in law enforcement, and burden already underfunded law enforcement agencies. Republican Governors Association Representative Colin Crompton called Hobbs' news conference a dog and pony show in a Monday emailed statement. Arizonans know that Hobbs has been pushing the same open border agenda that just brought down the Biden-Harris administration, and they're ready to hold her accountable, Crompton said. Migrant rights advocates have lamented Democrats' shift to the right on immigration law issues, such as President Joe Biden's June executive order limiting access to asylum for migrants who enter the country between ports of entry. It is legal under U.S. law to request asylum once on U.S. soil, regardless of how one entered the country. Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris also failed to act in defense of the immigrant community, said immigrant rights activist Isabel Garcia, co-founder of Tucson's Stop the Hate Collective and an attorney with the Coalición Derechos Humanos. The country is gripped with this anti-immigrant sentiment. Harris's message and everyone's message was, we're Trump light, Garcia said. We can't go Trump light because it's disastrous for our community. And that's why Democrats lost. Hobbs also failed to mention on Monday that the vast majority of fentanyl is smuggled into the country by U.S. citizens at official ports of entry, Garcia said. This morning was still a lot of hysteria about border security talking about fentanyl, and not a mention of that it's really not migrants that we're talking about here, she said Monday afternoon. The Arizona Daily Star reported Friday that Hobbs has declined to join other Democratic governors in a group formed to actively oppose some of incoming Trump administration's policy. Many of those governors are a long way from the border, Garcia said. We felt it was quite a betrayal because she, Hobbs, should have had Arizona and our realities represented in that group, she said. Hobbs said Monday she'll work with anyone to secure our border. The people of Arizona and this nation want more than words. They want results. They want politicians to treat the border as something more than a convenient place for a photo op, Hobbs said. Protecting our border is not a Republican or a Democratic issue. It's an Arizona and an American issue. You can contact reporter Emily Bregel at ebregel, that's E-B-R-E-G-E-L, at tucson.com, and on X at Emily Bregel. War in Ukraine. Russia gives Biden a warning. Administration allows Kiev to use long-range weapons across the border. This is from Ilya Novikov and Samia Kulab of the Associated Press. Kiev, Ukraine. The Kremlin warned Monday that President Joe Biden's decision to let Ukraine strike targets inside Russia with U.S.-supplied longer-range missiles adds fuel to the fire of the war and would escalate international tensions. Biden's shift in policy added a new factor to the conflict on the eve of the 1,000-day milestone since Russia began its full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022. It also came as a Russian ballistic missile with cluster munitions struck a residential area of Sumy in northern Ukraine, killing 11 people and injuring 84. Another missile barrage sparked apartment fires in the southern port of Odessa, killing at least 10 people and injuring 43, Ukraine's interior ministry said. Washington eased limits on what Ukraine can strike with its American-made Army Tactical Missile System, or ATACMS, U.S. officials said Sunday, after months of ruling out such a move over fears of escalating the conflict and bringing about a direct confrontation between Russia and NATO. The Kremlin was swift in its condemnation. It is obvious that the outgoing administration in Washington intends to take steps, and they have been talking about this, to continue adding fuel to the fire and provoking further escalation of tensions around this conflict, spokesman Dmitry Peskov said. The scope of the new firing guidelines isn't clear, but the change came after the U.S., South Korea, and NATO said North Korean troops are in Russia and apparently being deployed to help Moscow drive Ukrainian troops from Russia's Kursk border area. Biden's decision was almost entirely triggered by North Korea's entry into the fight, according to a U.S. official who spoke on condition of anonymity and was made just before he left for the annual Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Peru. Peskov referred journalists to a statement from President Vladimir Putin in September, in which he said allowing Ukraine to target Russia would significantly raise the stakes. It would change the very nature of the conflict dramatically, Putin said at the time. This will mean that NATO countries, the United States and European countries, are at war with Russia. Peskov claimed that Western countries supplying longer-range weapons also provide targeting services to Kiev. This fundamentally changes the modality of their involvement in the conflict, he said. Putin warned in June that Moscow could provide longer-range weapons to others to strike Western targets if NATO allowed Ukraine to use its allies' arms to attack Russian territory. After signing a treaty with North Korea, Putin issued an explicit threat to provide weapons to Pyongyang, noting that Moscow could mirror Western arguments that it's up to Ukraine to decide how to use them. The Westerners supply weapons to Ukraine, and they say, we do not control anything here anymore, and it does not matter how they are used. Putin said, well, we can also say, we supply something to someone, and then we do not control anything, and let them think about that. Putin also reaffirmed Moscow's readiness to use nuclear weapons if it sees a threat to its sovereignty. Biden's move will mean the direct involvement of the United States and its satellites in a military action against Russia, as well as a radical change in the essence and nature of the conflict, Russia's foreign ministry said. President-elect Donald Trump, who takes office January 20th, raised uncertainty about whether his administration would continue military support to Ukraine. He also vowed to end the war quickly. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky gave a muted response Sunday to the approval that he and his government have been requesting for over a year, adding, the missiles will speak for themselves. Consequences of the new policy are uncertain. A TAC-MS, which have a range of about 190 miles, can reach far behind the front line in Ukraine, but they have relatively short range compared to other types of ballistic and cruise missiles. The policy change came too late to have a major strategic effect, said Patrick Burry, a senior associate professor in security at the University of Bath in the United Kingdom. The ultimate kind of impact it will have is to probably slow down the tempo of the Russian offensive, which are now happening, he said, adding that Ukraine could strike targets in Kursk or logistics hubs or command headquarters. Jennifer Kavanaugh, director of military analysis at Defense Priorities, agreed that the U.S. move could not alter the war's course, noting Ukraine would need large stockpiles of ATAC-MS, which it doesn't have and won't receive because the United States' own supplies are limited. On a political level, the move is a boost to the Ukrainians, and it gives them a window of opportunity to try and show that they are still a viable and worth supporting. As Trump prepares to take office, said Matthew Saville, director of military sciences at the Royal United Services Institute in London. The cue for the policy change was the arrival in Russia of North Korean troops, according to Glib Volosky, an analyst at the CBA Initiative Center, a Kiev-based think tank. This is a signal that the Biden administration is sending to North Korea and Russia, indicating that the decision to involve North Korean units has crossed a red line, he said. Brazil focuses G20 summit on fighting hunger. This is from Eleanor Hughes, Mauricio Savarese, and David Biller of the Associated Press, Rio de Janeiro. Brazil pushed for a concerted action to alleviate hunger Monday as it hosted a summit of the group of 20 leading economies amid global uncertainty over two major wars and an incoming U.S. President-elect Donald Trump. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva welcomed foreign leaders to Rio de Janeiro's Modern Art Museum Monday morning and delivered an opening address that focused on fighting food insecurity. It is for those of us here around this table to face the underlying undelayable task of ending this stain that shames humanity, Lula told his colleagues. That will be our biggest legacy. Heightened global tensions and uncertainty about the incoming Trump administration ahead of the summit already tempered expectations for a strongly worded statement addressing the conflicts in the Middle East and between Russia and Ukraine. Further dimming prospects, G20 officials said, Argentina's negotiators started challenging some of the draft language. That left experts anticipating a final document focused on social issues like the eradication of hunger, one of Brazil's priority, even if it still aims to include at least a mention of the ongoing wars. Brazilian diplomacy has long strongly engaged in this task, but to expect a substantial, strong, and consensual declaration in a year like 2024 with two serious international conflicts is to set the bar very high, said Cristian Lucena Carneiro, an international relations professor at University of Sao Paulo. After Lula thwarted far-right former President Jair Bolsonaro's re-election bid in 2022, there was some excitement in the international community at the prospect of the leftist leader and savvy diplomat hosting the G20. Bolsonaro had little interest in international summits. Let foreign policy be guided by ideology, and clashed with several leaders, including French President Emmanuel Macron. Lula took office and often quoted a catchphrase, "Brazil is back." Under Lula, Brazil reverted to its decades-old principle of non-alignment to carve out a policy that best safeguards its interests in an increasingly multipolar world, even as his administration's foreign policy at times raised eyebrows. Two officials from Brazil and one from another G20 nation who spoke on condition of anonymity said Argentine negotiators are standing in the way of a joint declaration. Two of them said Argentina's negotiators raised several objections to the draft, most vehemently opposing a clause calling for a global tax on the super-rich, which they previously accepted in July, and another promoting gender equality. Last month, Argentina alone opposed a declaration of the G20 Working Group on Female Empowerment, preventing consensus. While Lula received heads of state Monday with smiles and warm embraces, he and Argentina's right-wing president, Javier Milei, stood at arm's length while briefly shaking hands. Milei is an avid Trump supporter. Trump's win in the U.S. presidential election this month and the imminent return of an American First doctrine could also hamper the diplomatic spirit needed for broad agreement on divisive issues, analysts said. Ambassador Mauricio Lirio, Brazil's key negotiator at G20, told reporters this month that Lula's launch of a global alliance against hunger and poverty on Monday is just as important as the final statement. As of Monday, 82 nations signed on to the plan, Brazil's government said. It is also backed by organizations such as the Rockefeller Foundation and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. A demonstration Sunday on Rio's Copacabana beach featured 733 empty plates spread across the sand to represent 733 million people who went hungry in 2023, according to United Nations data, calling on the leaders to take action. Brazil wanted a global deal to fight poverty and a project to finance green transition and some consensus over global tax for the super rich. Only the first one has survived, said Thomas Trauman, a former government minister and political consultant based in Rio. Be that as may, Lula reiterated his call for a tax on billionaires at the start of the leaders' afternoon session. Taxation of 2% on the total assets of the super-rich individuals could generate funds of about $250 billion a year to be invested in facing up to social and environmental challenges all over the world, Lula said. U.S. President Joe Biden attended the summit after a stop in Lima for the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum. He also traveled over the weekend to Manaus, a city in Brazil's Amazon rainforest. It was the first time a sitting American president set foot in the Amazon. The White House announced a $50 million contribution to the Amazon Fund, the most significant international cooperation effort to preserve the rainforest, after a prior $50 million commitment. Biden's administration announced plans last year to give $500 million. White House officials say Biden would also use the summits to press allies not to lose sight of finding an end to the wars in Lebanon and Gaza, and to keep up support for Ukraine as it tries to fend off Russia's invasion. And at 20 minutes past the hour, let's go to national and world news, although we just covered some of that. Air travel. Airline files bankruptcy. Budget carrier Spirit will try to rebuild after aborted JetBlue deal. This is from David Koenig of the Associated Press. Spirit Airlines said Monday that it filed for bankruptcy protection and will attempt to reboot as it struggles to recover from the pandemic-caused swoon in travel. Stiffer competition for bigger carriers and a failed attempt to sell the airline to JetBlue. Spirit, the biggest U.S. budget airline, filed a Chapter 11 bankruptcy petition after working out terms with bondholders. The airline lost more than $2.5 billion since the start of 2020 and faces looming debt payments of more than $1 billion in 2025 and 2026. The airline said it expects to continue operating normally during the bankruptcy process. Spirit told customers Monday that they can book flights and use frequent flyer points as they ordinarily would, and said employees and vendors would continue getting paid. The airline's shares dropped 25% on Friday after the Wall Street Journal reported that the airline was discussing terms of a possible bankruptcy filing with its bondholders. Spirit, based in Dania Beach, Florida, missed a deadline for filing its third quarter financial results, but announced that its operating margin would indicate a bigger loss than the company had in the same quarter last year. Those were just the latest in a series of blows that sent the stocks crashing by 97% since late 2018, when Spirit still made money. People are still flying on Spirit Airlines, they're just not paying as much. In the first 6 months of this year, Spirit passengers flew 2% more than they did the same period last year. However, they were paying 10% less per mile, and revenue per mile from its fares is down almost 20%, contributing to Spirit's red ink. It's not a new trend. Spirit failed to return to profitability when the coronavirus pandemic eased and travel rebounded. There are several reasons behind the slump. Spirit's cost, especially for labor, rose. The biggest U.S. airline snagged some of Spirit's budget-conscious customers by offering their own brand of bare-bones tickets and fares for U.S. leisure travel, Spirit's core business, sagged this summer because of a glut of new flights. The premium end of the air travel market surged, while Spirit's traditional no-frills end has stagnated. So this summer, Spirit sold bundled fares that included a bigger seat, priority boarding, free bags, internet service, and snacks and drinks. Those were huge changes from Spirit's longtime strategy, which focused on grabbing customers with rock-bottom fares and then getting them to pay extra for the things that are free on many other airlines. Middle East. Israeli strike hits central Beirut. Target of the attack, which came without warning, is not clear. This is from Sally Abu Al-Jud, Associated Press, Beirut. An Israeli airstrike slammed into a densely populated residential area in Lebanon's capital near key government and diplomatic buildings late Monday, killing at least five people as the U.S. pressed ahead with ceasefire efforts. Lebanon's state-run national news agency said two missiles hit the area of Zokak al-Blat neighborhood, where local UN headquarters and Lebanon's parliament and prime minister's offices are located. Since late September, Israel dramatically escalated its bombardment of Lebanon, vowing to severely weaken the Iranian-backed Hezbollah militant group and end its barrages in Israel that the militants say are in solidarity with Palestinians during the war in Gaza. The U.S. has been working on a ceasefire proposal that would remove Israeli ground forces from Lebanon and push Hezbollah forces far from the Israeli border. Lebanese Parliament Speaker Nabi Berri, an Hezbollah ally who has been mediating for the militants, is suspected to meet with U.S. Envoy Amos Hochstein at the Lebanese capital on Tuesday. The Israeli military had no immediate comment on the strike, which wounded 24 people, according to the Lebanese Health Ministry. Many areas in central Beirut, including Zokak Alblat, became a refuge for many of the roughly 1 million people displaced by the ongoing conflict in southern Lebanon and the southern suburbs of Beirut. The targeting of the airstrike remained unclear, and the Israeli army did not issue a prior warning. Ambulance sirens echoed through the streets as an Associated Press photographer on the scene saw significant casualties on the street. It was a second consecutive day of Israeli strikes on central Beirut after more than a month-long pause. On Sunday, a strike in the area of Ras al-Nabah killed a Hezbollah media spokesperson along with six other people. Later that day, four people were killed in a separate strike in the commercial district of Mar Elias. The Israeli military has not said what the target of the strike was. More than 3,500 people have been killed in Lebanon by Israeli fire, according to the country's health ministry. In Israel, 77 people, including 31 soldiers, have been killed by Hezbollah projectiles. And in the News Digest, firm seeks to disqualify The Onion's bid on InfoWars. A company affiliated with conspiracy theorist Alex Jones asked a federal judge Monday to disqualify a bid by the satirical news outlet The Onion to buy Jones InfoWars at a bankruptcy auction, alleging fraud and collusion. The company, First United American Companies, which is affiliated with a Jones website that sells dietary supplements, was the only other bidder at the recent auction, offering $3.5 million. In a filing in federal bankruptcy court in Houston, a lawyer for the company asked the judge to declare it the winning bidder instead of The Onion. The lawyer, Walter Sisak, claims that the bankruptcy trustee overseeing the auction improperly colluded with The Onion and the families of the victims of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in Connecticut in naming The Onion the winning bidder. Border wall charity scheme trial delayed. New York. Steve Bannon's border wall fundraising trial was postponed to February as prosecutors disclosed Monday that the former Trump White House strategist himself once suggested the nonprofit venture was a scam. Bannon, who recently finished serving a federal prison time for a contempt of Congress conviction, had been due to go on trial next month on state charges relating to the defunct We Build the Wall campaign. He has pleaded not guilty. Launched in 2018, the fundraiser rapidly raised more than $20 million privately and privately built a few miles of fencing along the U.S.-Mexico border. It soon ran into trouble with the International Boundary and Water Commission, came under federal investigation, and drew criticism from then-presidential Donald Trump, the president Republican whose policy the charity was founded to support. Briefly, 2020 election. The Georgia Court of Appeals on Monday canceled oral arguments scheduled for December 5th on the appeal of a lower court ruling allowing Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis to continue to prosecute the 2020 election interference case against President-elect Donald Trump. Hurricane aid. President Joe Biden on Monday asked Congress for nearly $100 billion in emergency disaster aid after the hurricanes Helene and Milton and other natural disasters. Boeing. Boeing said in a notice filed with Washington's Employment Security Department on Monday, it laid off 2,199 workers in the state, and job cuts eventually will total about 17,000 across the company. See cable. The foreign ministers of Germany and Finland expressed deep concern over the discovery Monday of a severed undersea data cable between the countries in the Baltic Sea, saying it raised suspicions of sabotage and an investigation is under the way. Auto safety. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said Monday it has finalized changes to automobile safety ratings mandated by Congress. Starting with a 2026 model year, regulators will add new driver assistance technologies and tests for protecting pedestrians. Deadly storm. Typhoon Maniyi left at least 7 people dead in a landslide, destroyed houses, and displaced large numbers of villagers before blowing away from the northern Philippines, worsening the crisis wreaked by 6 back-to-back storms, officials said Monday. This is all from the Associated Press. Former Representative Sean Duffy is Trump's DOT choice. Former congressman, reality TV participant, was a visible defender. Associated Press, West Palm Beach, Florida. President-elect Donald Trump said Monday he will name former Wisconsin Representative Sean Duffy as his nominee to be Transportation Secretary as he continues to roll out picks for his cabinet. Duffy is a former reality TV star who is among Trump's most visible defenders on cable news, a prime concern for the media-focused president-elect. Duffy served in the House for almost 9 years and was a member of the Financial Services Committee and was chairman of the Subcommittee on Insurance and Housing. He left Congress in 2019 and now co-hosts The Bottom Line on Fox Business. Trump said Duffy would use his experience and relationships built over the years in Congress to maintain and rebuild our nation's infrastructure and fulfill our mission of ushering in the golden age of travel, focusing on safety, efficiency, and innovation. Duffy is so far the second Fox-affiliated television host to be named to a cabinet position in Trump's new White House. Trump last week announced he chose Fox News host Pete Hegseth to serve as his defense secretary. And now moving on to Tucson and regional news. This was an unexpected red wave. How Democrats failed in AZ legislature races. Consultant. Dems shouldn't have lacked empathy regarding the economy. This is from Ray Stern, Mary Jo Pitzel, and Stacey Barchenger of the Arizona Republic. Arizona Democrats had a pleasant dream heading into the 2024 election. With a Democratic governor in power, they would build on successes from 2020 and 2022 and take charge of the state legislature for the first time in decades. Then they woke up. Taking advantage of registration math and a nationally winning message, Republicans fought their well-moneyed competitors in the November 5th election and expanded their one-seat majorities in both the Senate and House of the state. Democrats hoped to flip up to 12 seats held by Republicans, but only flipped one, a House seat that didn't shift the balance of power. Unofficial results indicate the split will likely be 17-13 in the Senate and 33-27 in the House. It'll be another 2 years of following rules set by Republicans of seeing most of their bills die without a hearing and watching their budget priorities swept away. The election results in the state legislature, compounded by the pain the Democrats reeling from President-elect Donald Trump's successful campaign and a pending GOP trifecta of control in Washington. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays said it was time for the Democratic Party to be very blunt with ourselves. The party's messaging didn't drive their votes to turn out, she said. Like Mays, politicos from both parties told the Arizona Republic that they place a significant portion of blame for the results on the Democratic Party platform. The Democrats' message to voters was inferior to that of the Republican candidates and their supporters who campaigned on fixing problems of the economy and immigration policies. Abortion rights and fears the modern Republican Party under Trump would become anti-democratic turned out to be less important to voters. Yet both Republicans and Democrats told the Republic that perceived weaknesses on issues important to voters this election cycle was only one of many factors that played a role in the Democrats' defeat. Registration shift weakened Democratic chances. The Arizona legislature has almost been exclusively under GOP control since the mid-1960s. Yet, frustration by many Republicans with Trump's first term changed the equation between 2016 and 2020, when Democratic registration rose and nearly caught up to the Republicans. The shift resulted in Democratic gains in the State House and Senate, leaving Republicans with a vulnerable one-seat majority in both chambers in 2020 and 2022. The 2021 redistricting process created five competitive districts in which either party could conceivably win, although four of them leaned right. All of these districts are in Metro Phoenix and largely followed patterns of districts previously split by members of each major party. They include several areas in North Phoenix, Chandler, and Mesa. With abortion rights on the line in 2022 and concern about Republican candidates who espoused baseless election conspiracy theories, voters chose Democrats Katie Hobbs, Chris Mays, and Adrian Fontes as governor, attorney general, and secretary of state, respectively. Voters rejected Trump-endorsed Republican candidates Kerry Lake, Abe Hamadeh, and Mark Fincham, who challenged Hobbs, Mays, and Fontes, respectively. Republicans managed to keep their one-seat advantage in both chambers, but Democrats believe the political winds were still at their backs in 2024. The state and National Democratic Party targeted the five competitive districts and three others as potentially takeable. But as data compiled by the Arizona Republic shows, Democratic registration numbers had already begun a downward slide starting in 2020. The analysis noted Democrats had a 4% drop in their share of the state voter rolls between 2020 and 2024, while Republicans held steady at 35% and independents jumped 4%. By 2024, so many Democrats had left the party that a legislative takeover would require a Democratic turnout much greater than usual, which did not happen. The registration problem for Democrats continued as early voting started in Arizona. While both parties had a good turnout ratios, far more Republicans turned in early ballots. The National Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee made Arizona and New Hampshire its priorities for legislative takeovers in 2024. It didn't work in either state. Of 12 candidates highlighted as key to flipping the legislature, only three won, while Republicans picked up two states in the House and one in the Senate. The DLCC's take could have been worse. Our work minimized the damage of GOP spending, and Arizona remains home to two of the most vulnerable Republican majorities in the country, the statement from Communications Director Samantha Paisley read. The committee said that Arizona is still in the organization's sights as it sifts through data from this year's election and outlines strategy for winning in 2026. GOP message resonated more with voters. Abortion didn't help Democrats to the extent they thought it would, said Matt Grodzki, a former communications director for the Arizona Democratic Party, who is now a political consultant. He faulted the Democratic message for lacking empathy and understanding of everyday Arizonans who are struggling with grocery bills, rent, and other economic concerns. "We were tone-deaf on that," Grodzki said. "All we wanted to talk about was abortion." Some Democratic legislative candidates acknowledged what they had heard from voters on the campaign trail often didn't align with their own pitch. State Senator Brian Fernandez of Yuma, who will retain his seat after beating a little-known Republican in his left-leaning District said he spoke to many people during the run and came to believe that the messaging from Democratic leaders was flawed. Harris did have some messaging, but a lot of it was like, I'm not Trump. I'm for democracy, he said. I think people were looking for conversations on inflation. Republican candidates and consultants played up that angle and criticized Democrats for being out of touch with voters. Take, for example, my opponent, Keith Seaman, said Representative Teresa Martinez, a Casa Grande incumbent Republican who won re-election. He's a very nice man, but I would never say that he's not. I would never say he's not, but he co-sponsored a bill to give illegal individuals free state health care. Democrats' messaging failures were embodied in some swing district candidates who voters rejected this year, according to Kirk Adams, a former Republican Arizona House Speaker who currently works as a political strategist. A prime example is Senator Christine Marsh, a two-term incumbent Democrat in a Republican-leaning swing district that includes Paradise Valley and parts of North Phoenix and Scottsdale, Adams said. Marsh has always been left of her district, he said, while praising the Republican Party for fielding candidate Karine Werner, a Scottsdale Unified School District board member who beat Marsh soundly in the election and will now replace her in the state Senate. It was an unexpected red wave, said Eric Meyer, who, along with Hobbs, co-founded the Arizona Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee in 2012. He blamed the political environment and its lean towards Republicans, a trend seen nationwide. These things are out of our control, Meyer said. We do everything we can to put our candidates in a winning position. There were other obstacles. Ring doorbells have totally changed canvassing, he said. People answer from their offices and don't have time to talk, or they simply don't respond when a candidate knocks on their door. Getting the vote out. Even with structural advantages, Republicans could still have lost control of the legislature without strong turnout. But election observers credited the GOP with a strong ground game, which included chase the vote efforts by supporting groups. Tyler Bowyer, that's B-O-W-Y-E-R, chief operating officer of the conservative organization Turning Point Action, described Republicans' turnout operation in Arizona as an important part of a national effort. The pro-Trump group created relationships with low-propensity voters by helping them with constituent services, and then strongly encouraged them to vote. Hundreds of paid staff members using a plan inspired by Democratic organizing methods worked very specific neighborhood territories in swing districts, starting as early as last year. Bowyer, one of the indicted fake electors of the 2020 presidential race, told Republic that workers made themselves available to relatively small groups of voters for questions about elections and governmental operations, which helped motivate people to vote. A crucial component of the overall push was to get Republicans to return to their previously high levels of mail-in and early voting. Many Republicans abandoned those voting methods after Trump and his favored candidates in 2020 and 2022 raised baseless concerns about widespread voter fraud. One of the biggest things we did nationally on this narrative, specifically with voting early, Bowyer said, but we didn't also offend people and tell them your reasoning for being concerned is wrong. The group was a fixture at local Trump rallies, urging people to vote. It also provided buses for voters on Election Day, taking them to less crowded polling places. Representative David Livingston of Peoria, who won an eighth term in the legislature in his safe Republican district, said the effort helped legislative candidates. When people who didn't vote often got motivated to vote for Trump, chances are we were getting them. Pollster Paul Bentz said in an unexpected uptick in public enthusiasm for the Republican ticket, coupled with a solid ground game, contributed to reversals in some of the areas where the Democrats had expanded their reach. That included Legislative District 16 in rural but urbanizing Pinal County, where Seaman lost, Legislative District 13 in the Chandler area, where Republicans swept the Senate and House seats after 4 years of split delegation in the House, Legislative District 4 in Scottsdale and Phoenix, where Marsh and her two House running mates were soundly defeated after previously holding two of the district's three legislative state seats. "We were trumped," said Deborah Howard, a Glendale Democrat who ran unsuccessfully for the House in LD 27. "It was a nationwide a six-point shift towards Republicans that no one saw coming," Howard said, "that helped Republicans in some of the down-ballot races. Dems spent big, still lost. Democrats and their supporters flooded the legislative races with cash, outspending Republicans heavily in some swing districts. In the Chandler district, for example, total spending for the two Democrats running for House seats totaled more than $1.7 million, as the most recent report due October 19th showed. Total spending for the two winning Republicans, former lawmaker Jeff Weniger and incumbent Julie Willoughby, was just under $700,000. Tucson Democratic Senator Priya Sundaresan, chair of the Arizona Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, said the group reported record-breaking fundraising that can't be considered a total loss. "We did a lot of things that were more successful than anything that had happened in cycles past," she said. Local Democrats held their ground as much as they could against the national swing toward Trump, she said, noting several competitive districts saw Democrats losing by smaller margins than the presidential race. Another factor in the races was the use, or non-use, of the single-shot strategy, in which a candidate in one party runs against two candidates from the other party for two House seats. Republican Michelle Pena won her House seat in her Democrat-leaning district in 2022 and employed the technique successfully again this year. Democrats ran single candidates in four of the eight targeted districts, winning two seats, including one previously held by a Republican. But in the other four, Democrats had two candidates each. Five of those eight lost. And now let's move to Hints from Heloise. Concern for a fellow reader, her husband. "Dear Heloise, I read with interest the letter from Lori R. in Grosse Pointe Shores, Michigan. I'm not a doctor, but after reading her letter regarding her husband and his help with shopping, I have to wonder if he is in the early stages of Alzheimer's. I saw these patterns in my mother shortly before I had to remove her from her home. Her choices were miniature chocolate bars and canned dog food. There was a closet in her home stocked with hundreds of cans and candy bags. Thank you for your column, TP in Arkansas. Shopping cart tip. Dear Heloise, I just saw a letter from someone asking why men don't help women with shopping carts. Realize that all these men are not able to push heavy shopping carts due to their own health issues. My husband has several health problems and is not allowed to lift or push anything heavy. However, I am perfectly capable. I have found that when purchasing bulky, heavy items such as large bags of garden soil at the home improvement store, many men ask if I need help loading up the car. Most people are kind. Just a thought. Don't load up so much at one time. Make two trips if possible. It's easier on everyone. This is from Deanna L. Burgart via email. Coffee ice cream trick. Heloise. Dear Heloise, a reader once wrote about a coffee ice cream with raspberry toppings, and it is amazing. I don't always have coffee ice cream, but my grandfather taught me that pouring espresso over vanilla ice cream tastes just like it. Try it, and you will love it. This is from Richard Caniglia of the Villages in Florida. Watch out for holiday employment scams. Dear Heloise, 2 weeks ago, I saw an advertisement for holiday employment. They emailed me an application, but asked for very personal information that no one has a right to ask for on an initial application. They wanted my social security number and the name of my bank. They said paychecks would be automatically deposited into my account, which normally isn't given out until somebody is hired. a red flag went up. And when I was told that they would need my checking account number, my savings account number, and a PIN number, it was glaringly obvious that they were scammers. I turned them into the FBI. It is from GH in St. Louis. Toothpaste and dogs. Dear Eloise, a recent letter mentioned some ideas of things to clean with toothpaste. I just found that my toothpaste contains xylitol, which can be fatal to dogs if they ingest it, even a trace of it. If a dog ingests a used piece of chewing gum that contains xylitol, it can suffer from seizures, severe seizures, and even sudden death. As I was reading your hint, I thought of all the places my dog might find it interesting to lick if she realized I had used toothpaste to clean the wall or somewhere else in her environment. Please put this information out. It could save someone's pet. This is from PE via email. You can send a money-saving or time-saving hint to Eloise at eloise@eloise.com. That's H-E-L-O-I-S-E. Now we go on to Royal Stars from Georgia Nichols. Happy birthday for Tuesday, November 19th, 2024. You are intelligent, determined, private, and strong-willed. You have a quirky sense of humor. This is a slower-paced year. Take time to rest and rejuvenate yourself. It is also time to focus on your closest relationships and make sure that these people are kind and that they have your back. Aries, March 21st through April 19th. Today, you might want to retire by yourself and enjoy your privacy, especially at home among familiar surroundings. Perhaps you want to contemplate your attitude about something. Memories from your past might make you realize how much you are controlled by habits. Tonight, patience. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th. Today, you're very keen to talk to someone. Not only because you have something to say, but you want to make sure that you are heard. This means that you have to find someone who is willing to listen to you with an open mind and sincerity. You don't want to waste time on superficial chit-chat. Tonight, avoid accidents. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th. You might feel more attached to your belongings today, which is why you will be reluctant to lend something to somebody. Others might feel that they have to defend themselves for some reason when there's really nothing at stake. Curious. Tonight, guard your possessions. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd. For 2 days every month, the moon is in your sign, and when this occurs, it heightens your feelings and reactions. However, it can also improve your good luck. Seek out the company of others today. You feel a need to belong to something or someone. Tonight, stay calm. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd. Today, you will be happy to withdraw from the busyness of your daily world so that you may have a chance to enjoy your own solitude. Regardless of your gender, relationships with females could be challenging. It's also a good day to explore any kind of mystical or spiritual discipline that interests you. Tonight, you're restless. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd. Your emotional contact with a friend or member of a group might very well be important today. In fact, you might feel protective towards a friend or want to nurture them or take care of them in some way. You might even feel jealous if they pay more attention to someone else. Tonight, a surprising encounter. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd. People might view you as a sympathetic or empathetic today, which is why you might be approached by someone who needs or wants something. Be careful about blurring the distinction between professional and personal relationships today, because it might happen. Tonight, obey rules. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st. Today, you have a strong urge to get away from all this. Basically, you need a change of scenery. You need stimulation and adventure. You certainly need to learn something new that is interesting or important. Travel if you can, or be a tourist in your own town. Tonight, plans change. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st. Today, your emotional experiences when dealing with others might be more intense than usual. This will especially occur if you are discussing inheritances or how to divide or share something. You also might have to deal with a shared property, taxes, or debt. These are not casual things. Tonight, check your finances. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th. Conflicts with friends, partners, or spouses will be more emotional than usual today because the moon is opposite your sign. If you are not more emotional, then perhaps you will attract someone to you who is. Do your best to listen with sincerity because someone wants to be heard. Tonight, cooperate. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th. There is a strong possibility that you will have to put the wants and needs of someone else before your own today. This does not mean that you're being a martyr. It just means that's what's happening. Focus on taking care of important health details and matters related to a pet. Tonight, surprise! Pisces, February 19th through March 20th. You'll be more playful and keener to socialize with others today. In fact, relationships with romantic partners, your kids, sporting events, social outings, and anything to do with the arts will delight you. Take time to enjoy yourself. Tonight, unexpected situations. And this was brought to you by the King Features Syndicate. And in sports, Arizona Men's Basketball Notebook. Arizona, Duke, lose top 10 rankings. This is from Bruce Pasco of the Arizona Daily Star. Considering Duke might be the most disliked non-conference opponent for many Arizona fans and hasn't appeared in the McHale Center for 34 seasons, local interest in the Blue Devils' visit Friday will likely remain high. But after Duke and Arizona lost last week, both teams fell out of the top 10 of the Associated Press top 25 poll on Monday, taking a little national shine off the matchup. Duke, 3-1, dropped from number 6 to number 12 after losing 77-72 to Kentucky and Atlanta last week, while the Wildcats, 2-1, slipped to number 9 from number 9 to number 17 after losing at Wisconsin 103-88 on Friday. The Badgers, 4-0, jumped into the poll at number 19. Scheduled for an 8:30 p.m. on Friday, the UA-Duke game is officially sold out through U of A, while the asking price for tickets started at $158 at StubHub and $159 at SeatGeek as of Monday afternoon. The game will be carried on ESPN2, the first time the Wildcats will be shown on a linear platform. In the first game of the two-year series, Arizona won at Duke 78-73 early last season. Duke entered that game ranked number 2, while Arizona was number 12. And the Wildcats wound up taking over the number 1 spot 4 weeks later. Well, thank you for listening. This is David Grant bringing you the Arizona Daily Star for Tuesday, November 19th, and through the good offices of Sun Sounds of Arizona.